Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. Stay ahead of all the big games in the best league in the world, the Premier League. With the latest odds, form guides, expert opinions and more, the fans are the players at Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com, 18+, begambleaware.org. T's and C's apply.
This is a Game Day podcast from TalkSport.
Hello and welcome to the Game Day podcast from TalkSport with me, Sam Matterface, Darren Lewis, the assistant editor of The Mirror, and TalkSport's football correspondent, Alex Crook. Can Borough beat United under the Friday lights as FA Cup weekend gets off to a magical start? Let's be frank. Will Thomas sting Lampard? Get ready for 1994 nostalgia as West Ham head back to Kiddy. Burnley change things up as they have the only Premier League fixture of the weekend. Yeah, I'm selling it to you, I know. The Game Day podcast, looking ahead to the FA Cup fourth round weekend from TalkSport.
This is Game Day.
Well, it's been a couple of weeks, hasn't it, since we last convened in the Game Day podcast room. Alex Crook and Darren Lewis are here, and so much has changed. The landscape has changed. Roy Hodgson is back in business again. He has answered the siren's call. He has turned up at Watford. Why are you shaking your head, Darren? Well, do you think there was an odd quote for him to say that he was like a sailor passing past the mermaid siren call? It was a bit Eric Cantona, wasn't it, in the press conference as he was unveiled as the 15th Watford manager under the Potsos?
It was. I mean, look, to be fair, they've lucked out the Potsos because he is actually a guy who will come in, get them organised and get them out of trouble. And to be honest, they don't deserve it. They show so little loyalty to their managers that maybe a departure from the Premier League would actually focus a few minds there. But the trouble is, when they go down, they come back and they think that that model works and they've got so many fans who defend them, but not for me.
But Roy Hodgson's going to do a good job, right? Because this is a guy going to get them organised. He's going to maybe be the man that sorts out a defence that hasn't kept a clean sheet all season, Crookie.
Yeah, I was slightly surprised they didn't dip into the transfer market on deadline day. Nat Phillips going out on loan to Bournemouth was one of the more eyebrow-raising transfers for me, because I was surprised there wasn't championship interest, bearing in mind what he did for Liverpool at the end of the season. They just about snuck into the top four when the likes of Van Dijk were injured. And I think he'd have been a good signing for Watford, someone they looked at earlier in the window. So for me, you're right, the first priority is to sort out that shaky defence. I think Watford have got a much better chance now than they did under Claudio Ranieri. But I still think without any additions on deadline day, I think it will be a difficult task for Roy Hodgson, especially when you look at what Newcastle did.
And they bought in quite a few, though, didn't they, earlier in the window? And they did try to get Dean Henderson, I understand, on deadline day. So look, I don't think all is lost for Watford, Norwich or Newcastle or even Burnley. There's still a long way to go. And Burnley play Watford this weekend live on TalkSport. So we'll get into that a little bit later on. But there's so much FA Cup action to get through. Are you excited about the FA Cup?
I am. Do you know what? When the draw was made, we all moaned and groaned that it wasn't that exciting. But there's stories along the way. There always is in the FA Cup, and there will be an upset somewhere, hopefully, at Stamford Bridge, where I'll be for TalkSport 2 on Saturday morning.
Not sure I can concur with that assessment, but what about Kidderminster Harriers against West Ham? That's certainly got FA Cup written all over it. And actually, so too, has Manchester United against Middlesbrough.
We are feeling the magic of the FA Cup.
Manchester United trying to get across in. They've done that. McTominay, it's a brilliant header.
For us, it was important to progress into the next round.
I'm being brought in for the future, for the long haul, and all my ambitions can be achieved at this football club.
Andras Spora has the goal that puts Middlesbrough in front, and you have to say, start of the second half, they've deserved it.
Yeah, loads of games on the TalkSport network. This starts us off Friday night on TalkSport. Manchester United against Middlesbrough. Manchester United spent most of their time in the international break, Darren, dealing with off-field issues. Difficult to see how those things can possibly not have had an effect on the team and the group going into this game. On the pitch, there have been signs of improvement. How do you expect it to go for Ralf Rangnick and his team?
I expect them to stay focused. I think he will have worked quite hard in ensuring that they stay focused. But obviously, we can't talk about those off-the-field issues for very obvious reasons. But at the same time, it's hard not to be able to address the fact that the individual concerned was a friend of many of the people in the Manchester United dressing room. So as human beings, it will have had an impact on them. And so I would imagine Ralf Rangnick will have worked very hard on trying to help them to stay professional, to stay focused, to put that out of their minds and to get on with their job. Their run in football terms is actually very good in recent matches. For all the noise, 3 wins from their last 4 in all competitions. They're in good goal scoring form as well. And they kept a clean sheet in their last game. I think they will win this.
Crookie, the statistics point to the fact that actually since Ralf Rangnick's been in charge, that they've looked pretty solid, Manchester United. Hasn't always felt like that when you've been at the matches watching the games. But in terms of Old Trafford, 5 wins in their last 7 games at home, but they're facing a Middlesbrough team that are in fantastic form themselves. 8 wins in the last 10. Chris Wilder has made a significant impact. Can he cause Manchester United, who might not be full strength because of what else is to come over the next few weeks, any problems?
Well, I think you say United won't be at full strength. I think it will be interesting to see what type of team Middlesbrough send out, because they've got a huge game themselves in the Championship on Wednesday against Queen's Park Rangers.
2 or 3 changes, I understand. 2 or 3 changes, that's all.
Okay, well, in that case, yeah, I think they will pose Manchester United a problem, because as you say, the form since Chris Wilder came in has been exceptional. They've got themselves to the cusp of the playoff places now, and he's been backed in the transfer window as well. Steve Gibson once again proving he's one of the most loyal chairmen in the history of football. So United will have to be at it. I thought the performance against West Ham prior to the international break was much better. It was more of the control, which is the buzzword that Ralf Rangnick has been using. But it's not just the high profile police situation that will disrupt that Manchester United dressing room. You've got Jesse Lingard, who was trying to force his way out on deadline day. That didn't happen with Newcastle. Dean Henderson, you've mentioned, I know for a fact that he was very unhappy that his move was blocked. So there's lots of man managing for Ralf Rangnick to do. Not necessarily convinced that's his biggest strength.
Yeah, I mean, so far, those things haven't really gone that well for him. Anthony Martial being a prime example, and also the situation that developed with Cristiano Ronaldo when he decided to take him off from the Brentford game. So, look, I mean, there's every chance that those situations could flare up over the next couple of weeks. United have won the FA Cup 12 times, and this is a competition that they've got to target, actually, Darren, because it's unlikely that they're going to be able to win any other piece of silverware, and they can't keep going on not putting pots in the trophy cabinet. It's been a long time since they last did that.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. They've got to get back to winning form in terms of silverware. It's been too long since they kind of cultivated that culture of winning at the club. And they do have too many good players not to be targeting the trophy itself. So, only one team is going to win the Premier League, as we know, City. There are a whole host of teams in with a shout for the top 4. This is a competition that if they can just put their heads together and get a bit of consistency, they can win it, because anything can happen.
He's given up. The Liverpool fan has given up. He's thrown the towel in already. That's it, Manchester. No. He's given it. Have you put the ribbons on the trophy and everything?
No, I'm just a realist. I think as far as City are concerned, they're too good, too strong.
Is it reverse psychology? Come on, tell us the truth. Is it reverse psychology? You're trying to sort of launch us into a false sense of security here?
Well, look, I would say this. Luis Diaz being signed, I know we're going to talk more about Liverpool later, but Luis Diaz being signed gives Liverpool real impetus. They've got 3 players in him, Jota and Harvey Elliott, who can deputise with Salah and Mane needing a break after the AFCON. And so you don't really lose too much quality with that calibre of player. But on the face of it, it would take an almighty collapse from City to throw it away.
I will get to Liverpool in just a second, because they've got a new star signing. He might well feature in the FA Cup this weekend. Fingers crossed, hope that is the case, because I'm doing the game live for ITV. Imagine the audience if he does end up turning up. Let's move along to our second match. We're going to preview about 10 or 11 matches in this podcast today. Lots of FA Cup games. Only one Premier League match this weekend. We'll get to that. But Cambridge United's reward for beating Newcastle is a game with Luton Town. Ah, look, I mean, you could have got a better draw, didn't quite work out. Maybe you'll get through to the fifth round of the competition and you'll get a massive name in that. Not the most inspiring draw, it must be said, but Kidderminster Harriers do get quite a good draw. They welcome West Ham United to Agbra for the second time, 1994 the last time they did so. Lee Chapman scoring the winner with a header in the 69th minute. We all remember it very, very well, those scenes. And that Reading game that they won to get to this stage was an absolute belter of a football match. We're hoping for very much the same, aren't we?
I think this will be a classic FA Cup occasion in terms of the atmosphere, the surroundings. It's going to be a bit of a culture shock for some of those West Ham players. But I think Darren made the point after the third round, once the draw was made, this is not the West Ham of old, the West Ham that would go to Oxford in midweek and get battered or would get knocked out of the FA Cup by AFC Wimbledon. They've got a lot more about them these days under David Moyes. He'll have them well prepared. They'll be professional. And I actually think they'll end up winning quite comfortably if they can come through the first 15, 20 minutes when the crowd are up, the kiddie players are running off adrenaline. I think if they can see that out, it should be a fairly routine victory for the Premier League.
I don't think they're going to use kiddie players. They're going to use full-grown adults. West Ham have lost the last two, though, after four wins in a row, Darren. Is that going to be damaging? And also the fact that they didn't really get too many replenishments in the January transfer window.
No, but they tried to sign Pelé and Maradona.
Listen, you joke, but I think that is the issue. I mean, you know, thanks to Crook for bringing up what I said in the last round, but I just think I worry for West Ham. I really do. They cannot possibly achieve their objectives with the squad they've got at the moment. It's too thin. You saw against Manchester United that, and in a couple of games now, that Antonio is labouring. He's out of form when he doesn't score or Jared Bowen doesn't score. Too few players are able to step up with any kind of consistency. And there is anger within the West Ham fan base. And I wonder if we could see a little bit of that with the travelling support at Kidderminster, because the fans feel a chance has been blown to really transform things for West Ham. And in the summer, it might not come again. By the summer, Man United might be stronger, Spurs will be stronger, Arsenal will be stronger too. I think their chance is gone. I think the fans might be right.
Yeah, and Manchester United might be stronger because they might try and sign Declan Rice. I thought it was quite interesting, actually, that West Ham went in with a huge bid for Calvin Phillips, probably knowing that they weren't going to get him, but to signal their intention that they were interested in him in the summer. Whether or not that move can happen, does that tell us that actually he's trying to partner Phillips and Rice together, or he's trying to replace him, Crookie?
I think the latter. I've said it before over the course of the season. If you listen to Declan Rice's post-match interviews without actually coming out and saying, I think I need to leave in the summer, he's basically giving all the indications when he came out after United and said he loves playing at Old Trafford. Obviously, United fans have latched onto that, but I think he's hinted in the past that maybe his ambitions now have outgrown West Ham. And if he was in any doubt, probably the lack of activity in the transfer window will have made his mind up. Interesting quotes from David Moyes coming out midweek. He said they made three record transfer bids in the January window. The board certainly tried to back him. I think also there was a school of thought by David Moyes that unless they could improve the squad, he wasn't going to bring in players just to make up the numbers and risk upsetting the harmony in the dressing room. That might be a mistake for the reason that Darren has underlined, because Antonio's lack of form isn't recent now. It's been going on for quite a few weeks. They've had problems at the heart of the defence. They've missed Cresswell as well. And you have to say at this stage, they're outsiders in terms of the top four. They probably always were. But, I mean, look at Wout Weghorst, for example. We'll talk about Burnley later. But Kevin Hatchard, who regularly contributes to this podcast, he says he's a player that could have done a job as backup for Mikel Antonio. So why didn't West Ham go for him? Clearly a player that was gettable in the window.
I mean, I love Kevin. You know, I've got a huge amount of respect for him. But he also said Timo Werner was fantastic. Jared Bowen has got four goals in four games. No English player has been involved in more Premier League goals this season. They've got Cresswell back, which is important for them because set pieces are a major part of what they do. Craig Dawson has gone close so many times. It is crazy. He will get one soon, folks. He will get one soon. And you talked about Mikel Antonio. One good thing for him over the last week was that he went away with Jamaica, Darren, and scored. So maybe that might be the start of things because he does score in batches.
No, listen, there's no doubt about his quality at all. The fact is he just can't do it on his own. You look at all of the other teams that are in contention for a top four place. Spurs have got Son Heung-min and Harry Kane. Man United have got Rashford and Ronaldo and Cavani. And Arsenal, they've lost Aubameyang, but they've got Martinelli and Lacazette.
Arsenal have got, hold on, I'm just looking. No one. They're all on loan.
But the players they do have can score goals. I just look at West Ham. And, you know, Crook made a point that when we next do a press conference with David Moyes, he'll come up with the thing we all expect. Oh, well, if it couldn't improve our squad, then it wasn't worth getting bodies in. No, I don't think the fans are having that anymore. There were players out there, Vikos, Abubakar, who's scoring goals at the AFCON. You know, there are players out there that West Ham could have brought in, and they will not finish in the top four. It cannot be done up against the caliber of club that they're up against and the depth of strikers that other clubs have. It won't happen. And that's why it's going to be... See, I think we'll see the start of it at Kidderminster, of the fans' anger.
Okay, all right. Well, we'll see. Watch this space. Listen to this space, because that game is live. 12:30, it forms part of game day. We're underway at 11 o'clock live on TalkSport, and that game will be our starting feature. At 3 o'clock on TalkSport 2 on Saturday, we've got live commentary of Frank Lampard's first game in charge of Everton at Goodison Park. It's all change at Goodison Park. Lampard in, Joe Edwards in, Chris Jones in, Donny van der Beek in, Dele Alli in, Tim Cahill set for a prominent role. Looks like Ashley Cole is joining the staff as well. Duncan Ferguson, I think, is staying now, although I don't know exactly what his role is going to be, bearing in mind it seems like the England squad from 2006 are assembling behind Frank Lampard. Popular appointment, a good job for him, and a good fit for Everton, Alex?
I couldn't say that with any kind of conviction, to be honest.
You've been promoting him all week. Why have you changed your mind?
Because I think the squad is still an issue. And I mentioned this on Tuesday on White and Jordan in the aftermath of the transfer window. It went unnoticed, but Everton actually spent another £30 million in that transfer window. I know that was offset by what they got in from Luka Dean. But for me, every player they signed has questions to answer. Mikhailenko doesn't yet know the league, didn't exactly start in sparkling fashion on his debut. Nathan Patterson, I think, has played almost as many games for Scotland as he did for Glasgow Rangers. Donny van der Beek, Manchester United fans have taken him to their heart, even though he's barely kicked a ball for the club. So there's a reason why three managers, if you include Michael Carrick, have decided that he's not up to the rigours of the Premier League. Dele Alli isn't the Dele Alli of 2 years ago. So I think they've taken a leap of faith in a lot of the signings they've made. In Lampard as well. It's not a great Everton squad.
Cheer up. Come on. I've spent a lot of time with Everton fans over the last couple of days. They're all absolutely buzzing for this. They're thinking about a change of formation, a change of attitude. They've got good players. Damari Gray is a good player. Andros Townsend is a good player. Dominic Calvert-Lewin is coming back to full fitness. Okay, Doucouré's out, and that is a problem. I think defensively, there's a massive issue there. Left back is a problem. They've only got one, that's Mikhailenko, and he doesn't know the league, and Crook's absolutely right on that. Right back's a bit of an issue in the fact that Nathan Patterson still hasn't made his debut because of COVID issues. But Seamus Coleman's there, and Kenny, I'm not entirely sure about those two. But they've got three central defenders. I think a lot of talk has been 4-3-3, reverting to that sort of shape. I think actually they'll go three at the back with wing-backs either side. They might even play Damari Gray as a wing-back to start with. It's all going to be about getting crosses into Richarlison and Gray, getting them on the front foot, engaging the passion of the support. And if they can do that, Darren, then there's every chance that they will stay in this league. They will stay in this league anyway, won't they?
Absolutely. I don't like this. If we don't like a player, he doesn't know the league. Vikos, you just talked him up. He doesn't know the league.
Exactly.
So what's the difference between Vikos and Mikhailenko?
Well, Mikhailenko, I didn't slag off Mikhailenko. I've actually been on record saying that he is a very good signing for Everton.
No, sorry.
I think it's very difficult for him to come into the league and this situation at this time. But
I agree.
If he takes to it, then it's going to be fantastic. I think Vikos will have a struggle as well, actually, but we'll talk about that in just a moment, because I'm not entirely convinced that it's the great transition.
Before you answer, let me just point out to you, Luis Suarez didn't know the league, came to this country, ripped it up. Vidic signed for Man United in the January, if you recall.
It has been a bit different over the last couple of years, players coming in from abroad and settling immediately. I think maybe actually enhanced by the fact that the pandemic hasn't made it as easy to settle for people.
Yeah, I wouldn't doubt that at all. But if a player has quality, he has quality. It's just that, really, have we become less patient with some of these players?
Well, I think we've become less patient completely with everything, haven't we? You
know, absolutely.
We had a prime minister for about 10 minutes, get rid of him. We've had a manager for 15 games, get rid of him. It's like, we've become a very sort of impatient culture in all walks of
life.
Absolutely.
But Everton can't afford to be patient. You know, they are in a relegation battle. I don't think they'll go down. And then you use Vidic as an example there. He was appalling for the first 6 months at Manchester United. You're right, he was acclimatising, but Mikulenko needs time to acclimatise. Listen, before you accuse me of being Dr. Doom, I hope it works out for Frank Lampard. I think it's the best appointment that Everton could have made at this time. I think Vitor Pereira would have been an unmitigated disaster. I think it's great to see a young English manager get the opportunity. I think he did brilliantly in his first season at Chelsea, and maybe that is under the radar because of what happened in the second season. So I hope he does well. But what I'm saying is, it's not a guarantee. It's not a give me.
Oversized vehicle reversing.
10 minutes.
Oh, well, it's great to be back, by the way, boys. This is the kind of stuff that we've missed. By the way, I think it is worth announcing, Darren, at this stage of proceedings, that Alex Crook, whilst all of us will be concentrating on FA Cup football this weekend, Alex Crook will be stepping into the shoes of the Dancing on Ice commentary box this Sunday. Are you looking forward to it?
Probably about as much as the West Ham players are looking forward to going to Kidderminster. No, I am. Listen, I'm nervously excited. I've been there with you, the master, the last couple of weeks. We got the list of songs through yesterday. I said to you, any puns you can recommend? And suddenly my phone was going off every 5 seconds. So listen, it's a tough act to follow, but I'm up for the challenge.
Good luck to you, by the way. I think you'll be brilliant. I think you'll be great. And if you're not, and the series gets cancelled, we'll all blame you. That's Sunday night on ITV.
Frank Lampard sends his regards, Crook.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, Frank Lampard's just turned
the league.
Frank Lampard's just turned to Christine Bleakley, who ironically used to present a Dancing on Ice back in the day. And she's just said, yeah, but he doesn't really know the game, to be honest with you. It's going to take him a little while to acclimatise. Right, let's move on.
I hope he does well.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. There's a lot more to those 90 minutes than what goes down on the pitch. With the latest odds, form guides and expert opinions, you'll know the score with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com, 18 plus, begambleaware.org, T's and C's apply.
Burnley against Watford is live on TalkSport, 6 o'clock on Saturday night. It's the only Premier League game of the weekend. It's one of those rearranged ones. In fact, today we've learned that there's quite a few rearranged games that are going to be going on during the February half term, which is the third week in February, the last week in February, and it's going to be sort of clashing with Champions League football as well. So it's going to be quite a congested period, I think, over the next few weeks and months. Burnley have got a lot of games to make up, but they've been bolstered by the return of Maxwell Cornet and Wout Weghorst arrived to bolster a team with a respectable goal-scoring record. 81 goals in 141 matches, if my memory serves me right, in the Bundesliga, something like that. A very good record. He's 6 foot six. Can he step into Chris Wood's sizable shoes, Crookie?
It's quite funny, actually, because when I was in TalkSport Towers on Monday, the newsreader in his bulletins kept saying that Sean Dyche believes this is a step into a new direction for Burnley. Not really. You've signed a 6 foot six English striker. I'd say that's playing exactly to type, to be honest. So he is a direct replacement for Chris Wood. Kevin Hatchard says he's brilliant, but then he says everybody who comes out of the Bundesliga is brilliant. Will he be enough to keep Burnley in the Premier League? Probably not.
They've had a problem scoring goals, don't they, Burnley? 16 goals in 18 games. That is not enough if you want to stay in the Premier League, Darren.
No, it's not. And they can't keep clean sheets either. Only one in their last four matches, two in their last six. I think as far as Vigost is concerned, he's decent. I think it gives you a fairly clear indication of the way that they want to play.
Long, but Darren, if he was that decent, somebody else would have signed him.
Yeah, but then again, I look at Maxwell Cornet and he looks like a player who could do a job much higher up the league. So sometimes players come to one club just to find their feet and then they make their way up the league to much bigger clubs.
And it might at least well be they've signed a player, Burnley, because I must admit, I was very worried about the fact that they weren't going to sign anybody and they were going to just drift into
I just think it won't be pretty. I just think it won't be pretty. Yeah, I think there'll be set pieces. I think there'll be balls into the box and they'll have a very clearly defined way of playing. But their games in hand could work in their favour, given the games they've got coming up.
Talking of things that won't be pretty, despite the fact that he was talking about mermaids in his press conference, I doubt that Watford will be that pretty. I think they've probably got more of a chance of staying up, actually, because I think their recruitment has been okay during the January transfer window. They did a lot very early. But also because I think they've got the best front three out of all of those teams that struggling in the bottom to stay in the division, Crook.
Yeah, and Ismaila Sarr's return to fitness will be a big boost for them. Massive. Obviously, once the African Cup of Nations is over. I think they've got a chance. I think if I was a Newcastle fan, I'd be buoyed by what they did in the transfer window. I thought it was quite sensible recruitment, despite the fact in some quarters it's been labelled unexciting. I think unexciting is probably what they need at this moment in time. But the presence of Roy Hodgson on the touchline at Vicarage Road gives Watford a fighting chance. You're right, they will score goals. They haven't had a massive issue in that respect all season. It's been at the other end, defensive mistakes. And we know one thing Roy Hodgson will be is pragmatic and will sort out that back line. Do you know what? Again, in a cynical football world, it warmed the heart seeing Roy Hodgson back on the training pitch his first session. He looked refreshed. He looked like he still got his enthusiasm. And who cares that he's 198? I think it's fantastic.
Yeah, I think it's great because I think it's great for Watford. It's the best appointment they've made ever since they've been back in the Premier League.
That's a big claim.
Who else is better than him? They've just appointed an England manager, a former England manager, someone who's worked at Fulham, Liverpool, West Brom. He always delivers at a club like Watford. He's got Ray Lewington alongside, who's a Watford man. As far as I understand it, they've been on the training ground and the players are absolutely loving the first few sessions. They will get repetitive, by the way, because that's what they do. They drill, they drill, they drill. But they're all very enthusiastic about doing the job. And also, it's a very short-term appointment. Everyone knows that. He's not going to be there for 100 years. He's going to be there till the end of the season if they stay up, maybe next season maximum. But ultimately, this is the best appointment that they could have made. He knows the league. He knows how to make an instant impact, get players keeping clean sheets and get them on the right road to survival. I actually give Watford more chance of staying up than any of the others at the moment, Darren. You went straight up to your camera then, when looking lovingly into my eyes. Why was that? Was it because you were just captivated by what I was saying, or were you like,
I'm
interested how he's going to come and justify that one?
Normally I wait my turn and I'm preparing what I'm going to say in my head, but actually I was just listening to what you were saying because I agreed with every word. I think regardless of what you think of Watford or the players and their way of doing things and the chaos under Claudio Ranieri, who should never have been appointed. And I have my own views about the fact that, you know, this is Roy Hodgson's 20th job, some of which he's gone back to, granted, but you throw in Finland and the UAE and England. This guy gets job after job after job, and there's a whole generation of players who can't get jobs. There are lots of black players who can't get jobs, you know. But I would probably be more scathing in that regard of Claudio Ranieri, who gets chance after chance, rather than Hodgson, who goes to clubs like these and does the job.
Yeah, because his record is good.
He will do the job. His CV is outstanding. And he gets players organised. He gets them focused. I think the novelty will wear off eventually. So I think the six-month deal does work for both parties, even though he wants to work for longer. But Watford are a basket case of a club and they just want to stay up and he'll do that for them.
Yeah, I mean, listen, what better to motivate you than a Friday night before a game, putting on the Little Mermaid on the coach. I'm sure it'll be singing Under the Sea all the way up to Burnley on Saturday night.
Also, let's hope it goes ahead.
Well, yeah, I mean, well, if there's any sort of danger Wout Weghorst isn't ready to make his debut, then maybe the Burnley will have a COVID outbreak or something. Tottenham against Brighton kicks off at 8 o'clock also on Saturday night. I really like Bentancur because I saw him in the World Cup in 2018. I thought he was terrific. He's been good for Uruguay recently as well. He's a young player. He's very tall. He's very thin. He's very elegant on the ball. He sort of played at the base of the midfield for Uruguay during that tournament. But that was a one bright spot on what has been a tragic Tottenham Hotspur transfer window. The fallout continues. Steve Hitchin has gone as the head of recruitment, chief scout, whatever he was doing from 2017 onwards. He was in that Amazon documentary. And I always thought when I was looking, is there not more to it than that? There must be more to it than that, right? What's the impact on Antonio Conte, do you think?
I think he's been ruthless in getting out the players that he didn't want. I think he's been decisive in basically not persevering with some of the players who lots of other managers have given chances to. The two players that he's brought in enables him to play with a two, and he'll use Son Heung-min as a striker going forward. He'll play with a 3-5-2. Davies, Dyer and Romero, who's fit again at the back. Reguilon left wing back, and Emerson Royal right wing back.
So just to clarify, you don't agree with my assessment that it was a tragic window?
No, I don't.
I don't either.
Really?
I don't, because,
okay, interesting.
Look, as far as Diaz is concerned, what can you do if you're Spurs when a Liverpool come along who can offer Champions League football and the chance to compete for the title every season?
But do you not think that when Antonio Conte took this job, he was expecting a lot more investment in January? And the reason I say it's a tragic window, one thing that concerns me is that I don't think that they have delivered what they promised him when he walked in the door. And if that's the case, will he walk out of that door in the summer?
I don't think he will. I think he'll stay. I think they'll give him more money in the summer. I think he took the job on the basis that he would have to sell to buy, but they couldn't get enough takers for the players that they wanted. I still think they'll continue selling players and raising the funds to be able to go out. I'm more disappointed with Paratici, the director of football, than Spurs, because Spurs tasked Paratici with going out and bringing in the players. It was in November that they lost to Mura, and at the time he said there's not enough quality content in the team. Now, between then and the end of January, Paratici should have had more options on the table.
Yeah.
Rather than having to go back to his old club for two players he signed for them to bring to Spurs. So I'm more disappointed in him than I am in the club. But I think as
he does
far
work
as
for the club. He is the technical
director.
Yeah,
but before
it was
Daniel Levy, you know, vetoing deals and rummaging around the bargain basement, he's handed all of that to Paratici. Hitchin's gone because Paratici's basically eased
taking
him out of the
job,
picture, and is doing all of the deals. But either way, I think just as Conte's been ruthless in getting players out, he'll manage up as well as down and say in the summer, look, this is what I want and this is what I want you to do to keep me. And then if they can't do it, he'll leave. But I don't think he'll just walk out before maybe they're having a very, very serious conversation, because this is the chance for Spurs to decide what kind of club they want to be. They won't do better than Conte in terms of a manager.
Crook?
I don't think Steve Hitchin can have too many complaints. You just said he's been there for 5 years. Their recruitment's been a shambles in those 5 years.
So
that was an easy decision, I think, to be made. I agree with Darren. I think Antonio Conte has been around the block enough times to know that January is a difficult market to trade in. They did try with Diaz, but actually just ended up doing Liverpool's bidding for them and just brought forward a transfer that would have happened in the summer anyway. Adama Traore was a bit of a faff. Had they have just paid £20 million earlier in the window, that deal would probably have gone through before he had the chance to have his head turned by Barcelona. But they have cleansed the dressing room and they've got rid of some bad eggs there in their eyes to try and make it a much more harmonious environment. They'll get rid of more players in the summer, and I think they will look a lot stronger by the end of the summer transfer window. If they don't, then Antonio Conte's position will be in doubt. Having said that, the short-term objective is to qualify for the top four. And I said this on TalkSport on Tuesday, without signing a player, if you look at the contenders for the top four, Manchester United had the best transfer window.
That's the thing that I don't understand. When I say that they've had a tragic window, the guy walked in and said there wasn't enough quality to be able to bridge the gap between them and Chelsea, for example, because they played them four times and it was talking after the semi-final. Now they're in a situation where there is an opportunity here, right? There's no doubt about it. Top four is available. It's available for Arsenal. It's available for West Ham. It's available for Manchester United. It's available for Tottenham Hotspur. Now, arguably, none of those clubs And you've just outlined that the situation at Manchester United, they don't have to go because they've already got the resources. But none of the other clubs have done anything in the transfer window to suggest that they're really going to make a go for it when they could have done. Would that not be a fair accusation?
Well, I think Spurs have, because Bentancur is a quality player. He's won the league three times with Juventus. He's an Uruguay international. He will add steel to that midfield that they didn't have.
But how long it took Jorginho to adapt to the Premier League. It's a faster pace of the game, Darren.
Player is different. Player is different.
That's true.
And some players take a longer period than others. I'm quite excited about seeing him play. We'll see, but I think the poor quality of the Spurs side suggests he's going to go in straight away and he'll get the opportunity to find his feet almost immediately. Likewise, Kulusevski. So I think they'll get that chance to acclimatise, but I'm less pessimistic about Spurs. I think they've been decisive. Had they not got those players out, we'd have been moaning about them and saying, oh, they're stuck with all those players who are not doing well. They've cleared them out. They've got a deal for Dele Alli. That means that they could get £40 million if Lampard turns him into a player again. That's good business. I think as far as Conte's concerned, he's not saddled with people poisoning the dressing room because they're not getting a game. I think that's good business. So, look, Son, as a striker, will be outstanding. I think he could walk into any team in the country, bar none. And I include Manchester City in that. He is that good. I think him as a striker alongside Kane and Kulusevski in a position that Son used to occupy, to me, that says to me that Spurs have reconfigured their side to give themselves the goals and the chance to get into the top four.
Okay, well, let's see what happens. Good luck to them in doing that. And let's see what happens on Saturday night when they take on Brighton, who lost Dan Byrne in the window. How do you assess them going forward? They're ninth, aren't they, in the Premier League? They're not going to go down. They've got 30 points. They're very, very comfortable. They could finish in the top 10, Crookie. But ultimately, this is an opportunity for them to try and challenge for a trophy.
Yeah, the window from a Brighton perspective was as predicted, really. There was vague interest in Tarek Lamptey and Eve Bissouma, but those aren't deals that you can do in January. I'd keep a close eye on Bissouma, in particular when the summer comes around, because he'll only have a year left on his contract. Dan Byrne was a bit from left field, as Graham Potter himself, in a very classy departing statement from Brighton, said they weren't looking to get rid of him, but when a chance to play for your boyhood club comes around, they couldn't stand in his way. They've also made a decent profit on what they paid to sign him from Plymouth. Lewis Dunk is back in contention, could well play at the weekend, so Dan Byrne wouldn't have been a regular anyway. They're still lacking a bit in terms of goals, reliant on Mope and Danny Welbeck, in particular Welbeck, to stay fit. But I think they should be targeting an FA Cup. I hope it's a strong Brighton team, because they're not in any threat of relegation. I spoke to Solly March a few weeks ago, and he said, we're not really European contenders. It's silly to suggest we are. So if you're not going to have a go at the FA Cup, then the season basically ends if they lose this weekend. So let's put a strong team out of your Graham Potter and let's have a real go.
This one could go to extra time and penalties, bearing in mind that 7 of Brighton's last 10 League and Cup games have finished 1-1 in 90 minutes. So the drawback is we're piling in now. Right, okay, let's move on to Sunday in Liverpool.
Towards the edge of the penalty area, and here's a chance, and it's tucked in by Gordon, and Liverpool are level. Kerry Gordon with his first senior goal. Bradley pulls it back, Konate's first time effort. Firmino is back-heeled it in. That is absolutely outrageous.
You want to see the best players playing. You want to see them giving it a real good goal like the other top sides of the Premier League do. And I want to see that from Jurgen Klopp a lot more for whatever tenure he's going to stay, whether it's the next 2 or 3 years. I want to see him try to win this trophy.
What a save from Woodman, but it's headed in on the rebound by Aidan Flint. Swings in the delivery towards Flint at the far post. Could fall for Colwell! Reuben Colwell! What a moment for the 19-year-old!
If you don't enjoy football, if you don't enjoy the FA Cup, honestly, I don't know what's the matter with you.
Well, I suppose this is all about what Team Liverpool pick on Sunday at midday, very early. Why is it so early, midday on Sunday, Liverpool against Cardiff? Well, it's because the television want to put this game on, but this is such a congested weekend of live sport on terrestrial television. There is Rugby Union Six Nations that starts this weekend. plus the FA Cup fourth round. So the BBC and ITV, who now hold the rights to both those two big events, are struggling to find slots to put everything in, especially with Dancing on Ice taking up the 6-8 slot, Crookie. It's sort of difficult to fit all the pieces of the jigsaw around. So this is Sunday live on ITV and, of course, live on TalkSport. It's brilliant, actually, because of the games all spread out. It means that TalkSport's got quite a good sort of raft of coverage over the 3 days of the weekend. Cardiff have been struggling a little bit. Six of their last seven away trips in the league have included both teams to score. And if Liverpool get on the score sheet, Darren, which you expect them to do, then it's very likely that they'll progress into the next round of a competition in which they haven't very often progressed in.
Yeah, they haven't progressed in the past, but I think because City are going to win the league, I'm a realist. I'm not going to kid myself. City are just too good. But I think if Liverpool end the season with one, obviously the Carabao Cup, they're in the final. They end the season with two trophies. That culture of winning continues. And I don't think that anybody would be too unhappy. And then they basically regroup for another title challenge again next season. The interesting thing about this game is that I expect some of the kids and the rising stars to play. Your Cuiva Kelleher's, your Nico Williams, your Curtis Jones. I expect some of those players to play. I do think Diaz will start. I'll be surprised if he doesn't, because he'll need to get acclimatized to English football as quickly as possible. Harvey Elliott's fit again. I would expect him to be playing some part, and Jota up front. And I think the more that forward line plays together, the more used to their game they'll get. But I still think Liverpool will be too good.
Yeah, I mean, £37.5 million for a player of what appears to be his quality. It seems to be quite a snip. It's another win for the Liverpool recruitment department. He's a player who plays on that sort of left-hand side. Will take a little bit of a pressure off Sadio Mane, who's not available for Liverpool this weekend because he's involved in the final of the Africa Cup of Nations. I mean,
can I just say, Sam, you know, we know that Liverpool hijacked Diaz from Spurs. And
yeah, sort of.
Daniel Levy at Spurs basically told the sporting director that he would complain to Liverpool's owners about their conduct. And
Daniel Levy said he's going to complain to Liverpool about their...
Sam Wallace, my colleague in the Telegraph, has done a really good analysis of it. And it's a little bit like if somebody was to complain to me about pulling off a great exclusive, and it would go to my boss and say, "My goodness, it's disgusting that he's gone and got that exclusive." My boss would say, "Great, well done, have a pay rise." As if Liverpool are going to be upset with their sporting negotiators for pulling out of the bag an outstanding signing like Luis Diaz. Absolutely delusional.
Yeah, it does sort of make you wonder, really, what sort of world Daniel Levy lives in. Interesting. Okay,
it does raise question marks, I think, about the future of Sadio Mane. You mentioned about taking the pressure off Sadio Mane. I think we're in a situation now where maybe it's difficult for Liverpool to dish out big money new contracts to both Salah and Mane, given the disposal, the riches at their disposal up front. So keep an eye on that one. And by the way, it's a good decision from ITV to keep Dancing on Ice in the regular slot, not just because I'm on it, but watching Bez and his crash helmet will be far more entertaining than watching Cardiff. Speaking of crash helmets, I've seen them live twice this season. They are dreadful.
Steve Morrison's in charge there. I mean, it's all pretty rudimentary, isn't it?
Yes. The midfielders will spend a lot of time looking up to the Merseyside sky. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, right, okay. Well, you've sold it. You've sold it to everybody. That game's live on TalkSport. You can listen to it via our app. Loads of games, by the way, on TalkSport this weekend. TalkSport, TalkSport 2. You can flick between the two stations if you listen to our app, including also on Sunday. I think this is a much better, not much better watch, but necessarily, but maybe a game which captures the imagination a little bit more. The old rivalry from the East Midlands, Nottingham Forest against Leicester City at 4 o'clock. What do we think of this one, Darren?
Well, you can't write off Forest having put out Arsenal in the third round, and they're a team with goals in them, discipline. They've got real energy. We saw them live on TV and they were impressive. Steve Cooper's done a fantastic job there. And I think as far as Leicester are concerned, they've got that soft centre. that Liverpool were able to take advantage of in the Carabao Cup. And they can score goals, as we know. They do have quality players in the midfield, but some of their goal scorers are at the AFCON. And Ndidi, obviously, I think he's just come back, so I don't know if he's going to play. That'll be interesting to see whether he does feature, but I wouldn't write Forest off in this game at all.
Yep, and the Foxes have failed to hold on to Leeds in the last two Premier League matches. They've conceded 12 goals in the last three away games, and Nottingham Forest very well organised under Steve Cooper. I particularly like Jed Spence, who plays on the right-hand side. He gets up and down a lot. He's athletic. He got great delivery from that right-hand side. He's got defensive nous as well. He's on loan from Middlesbrough. Didn't work out for him at Middlesbrough. And there was a little suggestion that he might go back to Middlesbrough in the January transfer window. That was available to him. They decided between the two clubs that that wasn't going to be the case, because actually Isaiah Jones has done well at Middlesbrough. Jed Spence has got a first team place at Nottingham Forest. It works for both. Middlesbrough are quite happy for him to sit there and accumulate growth in terms of as an asset. He will mature. Maybe they'll end up selling him in the summer, but he's been a very good player. Obviously, they've signed Keenan Davis from Aston Villa as well, who came on, who started actually the last round against Arsenal, and Graben, who came on and got the winner in that game, is a goal threat and has been a goal threat. So Leicester have to be on their mark. And for the holders, actually, not to have a sustained FA Cup campaign when they're playing a Championship opposition, that would be another black mark against Brendan Rodgers, wouldn't it? Because they haven't had the best of seasons, Crook, and maybe in the old sort of Arsene Wenger way, the FA Cup could save them.
Yeah, there have been mitigating circumstances. I actually think their season collapsed when Fofana picked up that injury after a shocking challenge in pre-season. And as a manager, you can't really legislate for something like that in a friendly match. I was surprised they didn't dip into the window in January. I've mentioned Nat Phillips, Joe Roden. I think Spurs were open to letting him go out and loan. Surely a player that could improve Leicester in terms of defensive options. Weren't Arsenal the cup holders when Nottingham Forest knocked them out a few years ago?
Yes, they were.
So there's a little bit of history to be repeated here. I think if you're going to ask for our potential upset of the weekend, this is a definite possibility for the reasons that you've just suggested. Another player to keep an eye on is Brennan Johnson at Nottingham Forest, who was subject to two or three big money bids from Brentford in the window. And Forest, yeah, to be fair, held firm. And then there's a real show of faith in Steve Cooper, who's had an excellent run of results since he got there. This is going to be a difficult afternoon for Leicester. And if they don't win, suddenly their season comes down to the Europa Conference League. I'm not sure we'd have been saying that in August.
Well, nor would Brendan Rodgers, because he didn't even know what it was until the end of December. I think the upset of the weekend, and this is bold, right? This is a bold claim. This is a crooky, bold claim.
Crooky, bold claim.
Thanks, Lucy. Bournemouth against Boreham Wood on Sunday, 6:30. Now, Boreham Wood, non-league, one of the lowest ranked teams in the competition, are absolutely brilliant. They are a very, very good team. They're towards the top end of the conference. They could well end up getting promoted this year, possibly. You never know. They haven't lost a game at home all season. They've conceded just 15 goals in their last 23 league matches. I've seen them a couple of times this campaign. Luke Garrett has got them very, very well organised. And you know what? They are a belligerent bunch. Any chance that they could expose Bournemouth, who at times haven't been the most resolute, Crookie?
Maybe. But despite Adrian Durham's whinging and moaning on TalkSport, they had a really good transfer deadline day. Bournemouth brought in five players, some of real Premier League quality. So the squad is a lot deeper now than it was going into deadline day. So I'd imagine Scott Parker can afford to put out a fairly strong team in this competition. The Championship is the priority, no question about that. But they went to Yeovil in the last round, which again was a potential banana skin. An excellent hat-trick from Emiliano Marcondes, who can't get in Bournemouth starting 11, maybe epitomising just how much quality they do have. So I think at home, I think Bournemouth will have enough. If the game was in Hertfordshire, maybe I would go along with you, but I think the Cherries will win this.
Darren, any chance? Living the dream?
I might just be a little bit contrary and say that, yes, they've had a really good transfer window, but it'd be interesting to see what sort of side they put out. Will they play some of these players straight away so that they can get hit the ground running? And could Bournemouth maybe take advantage of the fact that those players, as good as they might be, are still getting used to the game of the established Bournemouth players?
Anyway, it's not like you're going to a major Premier League ground or a Championship ground, is it? I mean, basically, Bournemouth's ground is the same size as Dean Court, I think.
Well, there is it?
11,000.
It certainly feels like that when you're there. I mean, Dean Court's like tiny, isn't it? You know, let's be honest. It's like, you know, there's a clubhouse in the corner. There's an old girl selling raffle tickets, something
bit
like that.
A creative license there from our esteemed host, I think.
No, it's equitable. Wouldn't look out of place in the conference, would it? Let's be honest. Dean Court.
Aren't you mates with some of the Bournemouth hierarchy? You're just slamming their football club here.
No, I'm not slamming the football club. It's the stadium that I always think is just a little bit, you know, dated. Go on, sorry, I interrupted you.
No, listen, I think you've probably stolen my thunder a bit, actually. I want to listen to you more than myself, so you go ahead.
I'll move on quickly. I didn't mean it. Love you all. Chelsea versus Plymouth is 12:30 on Saturday. It's the same time as everybody will be tuning in for Kidderminster versus West Ham. I mean, who's going to Chelsea this weekend? Oh, you're doing that one, Crookie, are you?
When West Ham are 5-0 up after half an hour,
everyone will switch over to TalkSport 2.
Tune into TalkSport 2 on the app. Yeah. 6,000 Plymouth fans amongst a sellout crowd at Stamford Bridge. Yeah. Brilliant. 40,000 people at Stamford Bridge for an
Well
FA
done
Cup
for Chelsea for putting decent ticket prices in place for that game.
Fantastic. And Plymouth, I mean, they're used to clocking up the miles from their base in Devon anyway, but certainly in this FA Cup run, this is the fourth round running, because of course League One teams come in round one where they've been drawn away from home. In fact, they played 8 of their last 10 games in all competitions away from home park, so that won't bring any fear. They're a decent enough side in League One. Obviously, they lost their manager Ryan Lowe earlier this season to Preston. That was a blow for them. Not quite the same force, but they do have a couple of players who could potentially cause Chelsea problems. Luke Jeffcott has scored in each of his last three games. Ryan Hardy, their top scorer, has 12 goals. And they've also got Jordan Houghton, Chertsey-born, former Chelsea Academy player who might have a point to prove. Having said that, Chelsea will win.
Jordan is a brilliant number four, probably the best number four in League One. He sits at the base of the midfield. He sprays passes around. He dictates play. He's played at Stamford Bridge a lot because, as you say, he was a Chelsea FA Youth Cup winning captain at one stage. Big mates with Ruben Loftus-Cheek and Andreas Christensen, who are in the same youth team as him. He's got a point to prove going back to Chelsea. In fact, his brother James Houghton, is still a coach at Chelsea, but will be in the away end this weekend supporting his brother playing for Plymouth. I mean, if anyone could buy a half and half scarf, it's definitely going to be him. What about Chelsea? Like Liverpool, Manchester United, they've probably got to target as many trophies as they can because, as Darren has already told us, Manchester City have won the league. How will they be affected by the loss of Joe Edwards leaving the coaching staff? Will it be that significant? Anthony Barry, I think at the moment, is going to stay as part of Thomas Tuchel's team and not join up with Frank Lampard. Ashley Cole looks like he's going to Everton, leaving Chelsea, but he wasn't really working with the team anyway. He was sort of marshalling loan players and having a different role at the club. So do you think there'll be any impact from any of the departures?
No, I think they'll know their jobs. They'll win. This is an opportunity for them to score some goals, and they'll be a class
above. Who's going to do that?
Well, I think we'll see. I think it'll be a Lukaku may well fill his boots, actually, against Plymouth. He'll be too good for them. I know we like to set these games up as though they're potential banana skins, but they will be a class above Plymouth. It will be a major, major shock if Plymouth get anything out of this game.
I mean, if Plymouth get something out of this game, it's like, I don't know, someone rolling a ball through a six-yard box and somehow a striker missing the target. I mean, that would almost be as surprising, wouldn't it? You know, it's like missing an open goal. I mean, who would do that?
All I'm saying is that as far as Chelsea are concerned, this is the kind of easy game, in their opinion, that they would welcome on the way to getting to the latter stages of the competition. And with the quality that they have at their disposal, even their second team would be too good. I remember tweeting earlier in the season that Chelsea's bench are better than Tottenham's team. Well, Chelsea's bench would be good enough to beat the Plymouth team. And I don't say that with any kind of disrespect. I'm just trying to be realistic about the fact that there probably will be giant killings this weekend, but not at Stamford Bridge.
Okay, all right. Very optimistic, Darren Lewis. Crookie, do you want to add anything to that?
I was just going to say, Chelsea don't have a Premier League game in midweek, do they? Because I think they're jetting off to the Club World Cup. So I wonder if that might have a bearing in Thomas Tuchel's team selection. Maybe he will feel that he could go a bit stronger than normal.
Yeah, interesting. And then that Club World Cup is going to be on Channel 4, dipping their toe into men's football. I know they've done quite a bit of women's football recently, but men's football is not something that you see very often on Channel 4, especially not club football. So interesting changes in developments. I noticed that there was a big change in the broadcasting landscape this week when Discovery looks as if they're in a relationship with BT Sport. That could be interesting as well, couldn't it? Because it creates a sort of second big juggernaut rather than just, you know, what we've had over the course of many, many years. A broadcaster in Sky who's massive and does loads of different things apart from just the football. And then you've always had just one sort of add-on channel, which takes some of the other football games away from them. But now you're looking at a huge sort of conglomerate of live sport with, you know, not only the Premier League, the Champions League, but the Olympics as well, which Discovery already have.
So. Well, I think the most interesting element is it will probably reduce the amount of money that football fans have to pay on subscriptions. And it is a bit ridiculous now, the number of different accounts that you need just to be able to keep up to date with all the football. So that can only be a positive thing for the consumer.
Yeah, because, I mean, you can get the Olympics and the Champions League and the Premier League all under one roof. That might well be the way we go in the future. We'll see.
Like Toys R Us, but with football.
I don't think anyone's been to Toys R Us for about 50 years.
No, but that was their song, wasn't it? All under one roof.
I don't know.
Toys R Us.
Okay. Should we go back to Balls R Us? Wolves against Norwich kicks off at 3 o'clock on Saturday. To be honest with you, I was looking for a 10th game of interest and it was quite difficult. I plucked out Wolves Norwich because, you know, they're both in the Premier League. I couldn't really think of anything else. This is not the most exciting game in the FA Cup, especially if you're Norwich. I mean, how do you approach this? Because you don't really want to be in it, do you?
No, they were quite lucky to get through the last round away from home against Charlton, where they scored a rare goal. Obviously, they picked up a big Premier League win since then to give themselves a chance of being in the conversation for survival. I still don't think they've got the quality. I've made that pretty clear all season. Wolves are an interesting case point. They kept hold of Ruben Neves in the transfer window. There was strong interest from not just the Premier League, but from Barcelona as well, as I understand it, although nobody made a firm bid for him. But there are one or two Wolverhampton Wanderers players attracting interest in the summer. Nelson Semedo is on the radar of Atletico Madrid as they look to replace Kieran Trippier. And I was told that Max Kilman is a player who is attracting interest from the very top of the Premier League as well. So keep an eye out for Wolves in the summer. I think Bruno Large quietly has been one of the managers of the season. They are in with a chance of European football. And another team like Brighton, who should take this FA Cup very seriously. It was only a couple of years ago they got to the semi-final, that incredible game, and they managed to lose at Wembley against Watford.
Brilliant game.
Their fans are amongst the most loyal in the business. They deserve a decent cup run, and I think they'll beat Norwich and will be a team to watch out for moving forward.
And Neves, I see this morning, is linked with a move to Arsenal in the summer as well, isn't he?
Yeah, I said big clubs.
Well, that's quite interesting, because if you look at Wolves, they've got the second best defensive record in the Premier League, and I think they're a good outside shout for a top four place. If they were to finish in the top four, why would a Ruben Neves want to go to an Arsenal?
Top four, that is a bold claim, isn't it?
Why is it a bold claim?
Well, no, because no one's mentioning
them. They've got a better defensive record
than
all of the other teams that are competing for the top four.
But how many goals have they scored over the course of the season?
Well, yeah, listen, 1-0 in clean sheets.
Binary,
can probably win you the league.
Well,
I mean, obviously, the bar has been raised by City, but the point I'm trying to make is that they don't have to be serial thrillers. All they need to do is continue keeping clean sheets, grab the odd goal. They'd be in much better shape than any of the teams above them. I think they've got games in hand over one or two as well.
I've been impressed with them. I think Jose Sarr has been a terrific replacement for Rui Patricio. I mean, everyone probably panicked when he first departed the scene, but he cost half the amount of Rui Patricio, and he's on half the wages of Rui Patricio. He plays out from the back, you know, his distribution's good, He makes good saves. He's a commanding presence at the back. He's done very well. And defensively, they, as you've already mentioned, they've been superb. Kilman's one of those who came into the team. No one talks about him, ever. No one mentions his name, ever. But, you know, I suppose that's the sign of a very good professional who just comes in and gets the job done. Yeah. Talking of which, you two, great professionals that just get the job done, don't you? Thank you very much. Apart from Crook, who keeps putting his microphone next to an electric appliance so we get a little whisper of a ghost in the background. I mean, his mic discipline's got to improve. Can you make sure you don't do that on Sunday night when you're at Dancing on Ice? Is that okay?
I'll do my best.
Thank you very much. Darren, where are you going this weekend?
I don't have a game this weekend. I'm back on Premier League duty next week.
Could you make sure that you're watching the television all weekend then and listening to the radio, flicking between TalkSport and TalkSport 2, making sure you've got your eyes on the... What are you doing? What?
He's like Cristiano Ronaldo. He takes FA Cup weekends off. Amazing. That's how big time Darren Lewis is now.
Right, that's it from us. We're going to go and iron our suits for Wembley. We will speak to you again on Monday when Monday lunchtime, I think, we'll be up by doing a review of all of the weekend's action in the FA Cup. Make sure you join us for that.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. The latest odds? We set them. Form guides? We've got them. Expert opinions? We share them. The best fans in the world deserve the best. Be match day ready before the whistle blows with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus. Be gambleaware.org. T's and C's apply.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.